Hello, this is Leonqua Chivette, author of the novel We Made Plans, and your host of today's podcast, Sounding the Alarm, Be Safe, Be Vigilant, Be Prepared. Today's topic is responsibility to report. Have you ever heard someone say something off-center and you think to yourself, that person has a twisted mind? Or when you're around someone long enough to realize something isn't right with this person, then you start to pay closer attention to the little things. And maybe you decide, I'm going to avoid this person because something is seriously wrong with him or her. Sometimes the situation is just a character call. And I mean, you know, sometimes each person has a type of person that they like to be around. But when the person causes concern, or the person who causes concern may have the mental capacity to cause harm, coupled with access to weapons, whether it's their own or a family member's, then the dynamics change. We have to determine whether we are going to make a call about that person. We don't have to be a psychiatrist or counselors to make the call, but we do have a responsibility to make the call. And then after it's made, let the professionals handle it. Whether you're in school and we're talking about a classmate that maybe you've known since kindergarten, or if you're in your place of work and we're talking about a coworker who you've known for a couple of years, it's still our responsibility to report. Today, our guest speaker is Deborah Stokes White. Deborah White is a strategic human resources leader with more than 25 years senior level experience driving high impact national HR organizations across various industries, including healthcare, professional services, financial services, consulting, and higher education. After serving her final 8 years in a national organization as Vice President of Human Resources and Chief Diversity Officer, Deborah retired from her corporate career, and she now has the pleasure of serving as an adjunct instructor, teaching and mentoring undergraduate students as they pursue futures in HR management, while also offering services as an independent HR consultant. She is a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania and Liberty University. Deborah holds a bachelor's degree in sociology and a master's in human services counseling. And she's a native of Ardmore, Pennsylvania. Deborah now makes her home in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you for taking the time and agreeing to join me to participate as our guest today, Debbie. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I'm glad to be here.
Good, good. I'm glad you're here. Again, I'm like honored that you're here. Your bio is so impressive. And again, it's an honor to have you as a guest. And, you know, we always go through and we do the bio with all the professional things, but I want to get to know a little bit extra about you. So what is it that you want to share with us?
Well, as a recent retiree, I'm happy to report that I finally have time for hobbies. And I travel a great deal for my job, but travel has become my number one hobby, just personal travel. So I love travel and I love handcrafting. Oldest son got married last year and I had the pleasure of making the bridal and bridesmaids satin bouquets. So I'm just enjoying retirement.
That's good. That's always good to be able to retire and then to enjoy, have a long time to enjoy the actual retirement from working so hard. So that's good. And congrats to your son who just got married.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so again, we're talking about the responsibilities to report. And since you are in the corporate setting, we're going to talk about what steps in general that HR departments take or should take to gauge the mental stability of a potential employee before extending an offer of employment.
Okay. And, you know, I think as I approach that, I look first at the overall stability of the candidate. And there's a lot of opportunities within the kind of the recruitment and hiring process to look at that, even starting with the interview, when you can really, really explore job changes, reasons that a person moves from one locale to another. And what you're looking for when you do that, your eye is looking towards any evasive responses or any unexplained gaps where they can't say what they were doing or where they were. Also, anything in their response that just gives you even a hint of evidence of conflicts at work, and especially dissatisfaction when it seems that it's always geared towards a supervisor or towards a specific individual. So looking for those kinds of things. Another thing while interviewing is just making sure that you're not the only one assessing the candidate, that more than one person meets with them and talks with them in order to get different perspectives. Someone else might see something that the initial interview viewer didn't see. And I always suggest that one of the interviews be like a very relaxed atmosphere. Do it in a where you're not sitting across the desk or across the table from the person, you know, side by side, creating an atmosphere where the person will feel a little more trusting and may reveal more of their own personality and temperament. And when exploring, kind of going at it that way, your interview questions should prompt some very specific examples from them of dealing with difficult personalities, dealing with stress, and something that happened that wasn't fair, those kinds of questions, and just keep guiding them to tell you specifically, not just to tell you how they would deal with it, but how they have. So that's kind of the interview end. I love the fact that we have a lot of other tools, definitely using criminal background checks, and extensively, you know, making sure that you're covering not just a federal criminal background, but also every locale they've lived in. So that's another reason for getting them relaxed enough to have the conversations where you're getting information that might not show up on a resume or an application. Another area is references. And those can be kind of tough because a lot of companies have this no comment policy, you know, just trying to protect themselves from claims. And that's where you kind of tap into your professional network and find somebody who knows somebody who works at that company. And although you may not be able to officially use the things you hear, those are helpful and they're things that you can explore with them. And finally, I'll mention testing, pre-employment testing, personality tests, temperament tests, substance abuse tests, all the things that kind of help gauge stability and even in these cases, mental stability. And of course, HR has to be sure that you're using only scientifically validated tests and also that we're using them consistently across the company. That's the protection for HR. But those are some of the tools.
Well, those all are good tools. I know that when I've interviewed with different positions, the fact that we have to take the personality test is always like, not that I have problems with my personality. It's just that oh boy, a personality test. I have understood that it's required in some. With some organizations that is something that's required, but I'm never sure to what extent that it's used. And honestly, in some cases, I have tried to answer a question a certain way because I know if it's answered any other way, it's going to be a red flag.
It's true. And people do try. The one thing about them, when you have a really scientifically validated test, it's asking it, you know, it asks each thing that it's trying to get to, it's going at it 10 different ways. So they can be really hard to manipulate.
No, and I have noticed that too. I've noticed that it's the same question phrased differently. It's best to just be honest and, you know, that's the best thing to do. The other thing that you mentioned earlier was the thing about having the conflict with supervisors. And I know that in an active shooter response situation that often supervisors are more likely to be targeted first compared to other coworkers. So I think it's interesting. Every aspect or tool that you mentioned is all good in definitely trying to gauge the mental stability. So thank you for sharing that information because, I'm not sure to what extent our listeners are aware of what an HR department actually goes through to finally make that decision and hire them or the next person. So thanks for sharing that.
You're welcome.
For active shooter response training in the workplace, usually it includes like a graphic of the behavior continuum, you know, demonstrating behaviors that individually or collectively can escalate to an active shooter situation. Are there common characteristics or behaviors that cause you to red flag someone for potential workplace violence once they've been hired, maybe that you didn't catch in all the things that you do prior to hiring?
There definitely are. And while some of the behaviors are easily observable, others are sometimes pretty well hidden. So you kind of have to look behind some of the activities or things that are going on with an employee. So some things that I mentioned, they're going to appear relatively benign, yet they mm-hmm. really are red flags frequently. So you may have an employee who had a good or at least an acceptable attendance and performance record. Well, mm-hmm. I pay attention when there's an unexplainable decline in their attendance or their job performance. Right. Something that they can't explain, you can't explain. Mm-hmm. It gets spotty. So that's like the first sign. Another is if they begin to escalate in their behaviors towards their coworkers, and this, of course, is more observable, either intimidating behavior, harassing behavior, or sometimes mm-hmm. even abusive towards others in the workplace. I've seen that right. happen. I've seen an employee who would suddenly have outbursts and it was a very polished professional environment. And she would sometimes have these outbursts and just start cursing at her colleagues. And then sometimes it escalated after a while to where she started talking about really bizarre things, like her deceased father talking to her through the television, you know. Uh-oh. And so, you know, those behaviors, those are the obvious ones, right? And another thing is their complaint patterns. So maybe mm-hmm. they're complaining about, you know, things in the workplace. And if it starts, like you mentioned, the targeting, the supervisors, you know, frequently right. being the targets, and it's true. And so if they start, their complaints are always centered around the supervisor or one specific coworker or group of coworkers. And it you see it escalating and, you know, no blame to themselves. So those complaint patterns are important. There's another that I usually call telling it at the bus stop. And that's when something's going on in their life and they start to discuss these problematic interpersonal issues with whomever will listen. You know, it's like
yes.
they are mm-hmm. so overwhelmed that they just begin to pour it out everywhere. So you'll hear it from different places and people. Then there's some of the more obvious, I guess, or more obvious red flags, like observable mental health issues. Although what we do find is that employees with mental health issues are more often the victim than they are the perpetrator. Yeah,
right.
They really are.
Okay.
So in employee situations, okay. that's kind of where the stats are. And finally, there's, of course, the very real possibility that at some point, the employee may begin to leak information to others about their own violent intent. So that,
yes.
of course, mm-hmm. you know, we're almost past red flag at that point.
Right.
What I find, though,
yes.
hand in hand with kind of the behaviors is that you have to also pay attention to what are generally the leading causes of workplace violence. So you're looking at the behaviors, but you're also mm-hmm. looking at which of these other situations the employee is in. So like
right.
high level of work-related stress, having family mm-hmm. or marital problems, whether they're in the midst of a discipline or termination of employment, signs of drug and alcohol abuse, or and
right.
this is probably the biggest, when they're experiencing multiple stressors. And that's probably mm-hmm. the hugest red flag. So you might have an employee who's under some financial pressure. They're asking for advances on their salary. At the same time, they're going through eviction or foreclosure. Maybe their car's mm-hmm. been repossessed. They're having trouble getting to work. They're having legal troubles. And, you know, you start combining all of that. And it could be things like losses, grief issues, or personal physical health issues. So kind
right.
of multiple stressors. And the thing about all of these issues is that we can't take it lightly. Used to be that in HR, we'd say if it was just employee gossip, you don't pay attention to it. But now
right.
I say, pay attention to employee gossip. You know, take it seriously and find ways to investigate without, you know, raising it to everyone's attention. Pay attention
mm-hmm.
to social media posts, you know, and just look for even the tiniest thread of truth in like gossip and in social media and places like that, keeping in mind that that thing that we mentioned earlier, that usually one of the victims of workplace violence was targeted.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's all good information. Those stressors definitely make a difference and can have an impact on, you know, whether or not someone is or where they are on that path of destruction. So that's mm-hmm. definitely important to recognize. And it's usually the coworkers, the same level colleagues that will hear it first before a supervisor. So that's definitely a great information that you shared. We need to take a brief pause for a commercial break, but listeners, please stick with us. We have much more to come from our guest speaker, Deborah Stokes White.
Hey everybody, it's your girl, Charlotte Van Horn with Locks Forever. I'm extending an invitation to you to check out our new podcast, Sisters Talking Natural Hair and Business. This is a high energy, keeping it real and relevant podcast for natural hair enthusiasts, service providers, and business owners. We will talk about everything from tender heads to how to build a tough natural hair business. If you're starting a natural hair business, this is the podcast for you. It's informative, fun, with a twist of humor, inspiration, and feeling of sitting around the table talking with your best friends. Tune in every Tuesday at 6 p.m. You will not be disappointed.
We are back with our guest speaker, Deborah Stokes White, former Vice President of Human Resources and Chief Diversity Officer for a private North Carolina firm. Debbie, thank you again for joining us. We really appreciate it. Our topic today is the responsibility to report. And so with that, can you share with us your experience with an incident where someone reported a potential threat to you and how you handled that? And in general, what steps can HR take to protect the remaining employees from someone returning to the office with malintent?
Absolutely. Earlier in my career, I had a role where my primary responsibility was investigating formal complaints. And I had an employee, I'm going to call him John today, who lodged a discrimination complaint against his manager. And we investigated it. We concluded it was unfounded. We shared the outcome with John. There were some issues and concerns with the manager, like just some ineffectiveness and some unfairness, but it wasn't discrimination. Well, John, after we shared the outcome with him and we let him know that we were addressing it with the manager and her leader, he continued to complain over the next week. I mean, it didn't slow down at all. And he began to show increasing agitation. So he'd just wander into the office and just start pouring it out. And it was always about the manager and, you know, what she was doing wrong. And then end of that week, following Monday, I got to the office and one of his friends, another employee, met me at the door. And this was sort of before hours, and told me that John had come to his house over the weekend and had shown him a pistol and said that she was going to get what was coming to her. So we went into action. The first thing we did was called a crisis counselor. Well, no, actually, the first things we did were in the workplace, because I didn't let the manager know exactly what the concern was, but I let her know that we were concerned for her safety, and I sent her home. So we did that. We had security escort her to her car and told her she should work from home that day, and that we would call her later. We disabled his badge to the building. Mm-hmm. And you had to get to the bank of elevators, you had to get past a reception area. So we advised the receptionist that when he came in, she should tell him that I needed to see him for a moment. And that wasn't too odd, because he was always in complaining, you know.
Right.
So
yeah.
He would come, and he did. But before he got there, we had contacted like local police. We contacted, we didn't have a security on site, but there was roving security in our business park. So we contacted them. So I had a security officer kind of lounging in HR in plain clothes. We had local policemen lounging in the lobby in plain clothes. And then we had police cars outside, just not so obvious. We call crisis counseling. We call local mental health. We talked to our attorney to see what we had the right to do. Got him in. I had someone else in the office, made sure we did the things that you're advised to do. Like I was sitting closest to the door and my colleague was sitting next closest to the door and John was across the room, you know, so if anything happened, we could. He had a backpack with him, so we paid attention to that, you know, just not knowing what was. Got him, engaged him in conversation. And, you know, I asked him what was he, you know, how he was feeling, and just got him to kind of relax and talk. And at one point I said, you know, have you thought about how you want to, you really want to resolve this issue with her? And he jokingly flashed his fingers like a pistol and said, I really want to just pick her off. And so eventually I got
him to.
Yeah, he said that, but he said it and laughed like it was a very light, you know, like a joke. But he also.
Yeah, that's never a joke.
No, it's not. It's not. And that's what people need to know. It's never, ever a joke. And he was having erratic kind of his emotions were kind of up and down throughout our. We were probably in the office for a good 40 minutes, I'd say, total. I finally did get him to agree. I built a relationship where he knew he could come and complain to me. So I finally got him to agree. I asked him if he had a gun and he said he did. He said it was licensed and he said it was at home. And I got him to agree to allow me to go through his backpack and his jacket. And I didn't find anything, thankfully. But how the outcome of this was that we got him to agree to talk to a crisis counselor. He made that call from our office, my office. And in the midst of that call, he actually ended up, the crisis counselor already knew about the incident, but he ended up sharing that, you know, through her prompting. He ended up sharing what he had said to his coworker over the weekend and agreed to be taken to mental health and was assessed. Placed on 72-hour hold, eventually admitted, and actually ended up on a long-term medical leave. He never did actually return to work, although he did return to the workplace once. So that had a good ending, you know, but it could have been very different.
So let me just ask you. So that day he did not actually have the gun with him?
Well, I don't know.
When you checked through everything?
It wasn't in his backpack. It wasn't in
It wasn't.
Jacket. Right. You know, but could he have had it somewhere else? I don't know. On his person? Could it have been in his car? We really don't know. You know, that's kind of the frightening part. But
and the other question is, so you guys, you and your coworker, you never had to mention that the coworker that he spoke to said something, correct?
Never mentioned that. Okay. That was really purposeful. I just, you know, got him to talk about how he was feeling and talk about what he was thinking. And so confidentiality, I think of, you know, that's key because of course, if that person, if it did get out that he had said anything, he'd never share. He'd never report again. We're talking about duty to report, responsibility to report. He would never, you know.
So I'm sorry to cut you off. I just want to say that the person who actually reported him would never report anyone else if she found out that you guys said something to this gentleman that it was her who, you know, gave you the notice that he was up to something. So, I mean, I know for me personally, I would be hesitant to report a second time if my name was used the first time. And that's what we want to avoid because we want people to say something.
Absolutely. And she was his friend. And really, the key is like having her, you know, wanting to make sure that she knows that she's actually helping him. She's helping the work, you know, her colleagues and herself, but she's also helping him, you know. So when I think about that situation and just in general, what HR can do to protect, you know, the others in the workplace, one thing that I think is critical is treating the employee who's the suspect, treating them respectfully. And this is the part where a lot of times we mess up because, you know, we either like swing our authority, you know, or we get emotional, you know. And I always tell managers that they're disciplining or especially if they're terminating somebody. I'm like, keep your emotions in check. You don't even have to be emotional. You have the authority to make the decision. We've approved your decision. We're with you. We were always with HR was always with managers when they terminated, but but you know, have some empathy for them because you've got the upper hand, you know. Mm-hmm. And so just being empathetic and being respectful goes a long way. And also for HR, it's important to tell the employee how you're addressing their concerns. If they have concerns, like, don't just do it and say, this is it, you know, this is the outcome. Tell them how you're addressing it. Or if there's any validity to it, you can tell them that and how you're handling it. And so even when terminating an employee, I used to always try to make sure they knew what recourse they had after the termination. Right. So they wouldn't feel like they were up against a brick wall.
Often we hear that situations where someone was terminated earlier in the day and then they come back later in the day with a weapon, and that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know if it's because of the accumulation of things that brings the person to that point, or if it was just the way the person was let go that sends them over the edge. So yeah, it's definitely important in how it's presented. I mean, you know, it's never great when someone's getting fired if you're the person being fired, but, you know, at least if it's done with respect and in a way that they will hopefully feel like they're not, there's no need to come back, that they're just going to be done with it and move on. That's what ultimately what you want them to do.
That's so, really what you want. Or if they're not happy, and they're not going to be happy with being fired, that there is another recourse, like there's somebody else you can give that complaint to, even if it's outside of the organization. You're not encouraging them to go, you know, sue the company, but you are saying if they're not going to, like, if you know you're dealing with somebody who's not satisfied and isn't going to let it go, then you need to advise them of where they can take the complaint so they don't come back with a gun. You know?
Right, exactly.
And then the security parts are the other parts of that. Just making sure you disable their badge if it's an entry badge.
Absolutely.
You know, passes, change locks, engage security officers if you have them. And if you don't, and it's an employee who seems kind of volatile, just consider hiring, because I've done this at other organizations, hire a short term, hire a security guard.
Right, a temporary.
Engage,
just
and then if necessary, get local law enforcement and mental health authorities involved.
That's great. In the book, in my book, We Made Plans, the main character, Raquel, she spent a decent amount of time on the issue of reporting someone. She specifically believed that if anyone had trusted their gut and reported the red flags that the gunman exhibited before the day of the event in the book, then possibly it may have possibly prevented the attack. So what are the HR policies that encourage people to report? And I know we discussed it briefly, but can it be done anonymously?
Yeah, and to the anonymous question, organizations absolutely should have that in place. So one thing is that there should be more than one avenue for an employee to report their concern. Some organizations get very hung up on, like, you've got to go through chain of command, you've got to tell your supervisor, and then the next level and next level. Well, suppose the supervisor's the issue, you know, or suppose they don't trust the levels of leadership. So multiple avenues to report, and also having some kind of an employee hotline that's an external reporting source. That guarantees anonymity and also that provides that anonymous reporter with some kind of closure regarding their concern. We always had one at my last several organizations. We had a line where, you know, they got a number, they could call back with that number or write back with that number and be told what was being done or next steps, that sort of thing. So there was some closure for a person, even if they reported anonymously. Having an open door policy that encourages conversation with anyone, any leader in the company, as opposed to just their own leaders in their organization. And also non-retaliation policies. I think that's really important so that an employee can feel comfortable that if I make this complaint, even if I do it anonymously, but it something points towards me, that I'm protected from, you know, then being disciplined or terminated by my supervisor or manager as a result of it. And then I think it's not just having these kinds of policies, but also making sure that employees know about them and not just having them sign off on a piece of paper, but making sure that they know about them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. A detailed training. I mean, yeah. Because I know for my place of employment, we have the trainings that we have to attend. We have to physically be there. And then we have online trainings that we do. Some we do every 6 months, some we do annually. But it's definitely more than just signing off that you read it, because we all know that that's not necessarily the case. So,
exactly.
But listen, we need to take another break. I apologize. We need to take another commercial break. But please stay tuned. We have more valuable insights from our guest speaker, Deborah Stokes White. Hello, I'm Leonque Chavette, publisher, corporate trainer, speaker, and author of We Made Plans, a fictional novel which debuted as number 3 on Amazon's Hot New Releases. This amazing story chronicles the lives of a group of longtime friends who were in the midst of living their best lives when they experienced a devastating, trajectory-altering event. Hashtag the event. If you want to purchase my book, and you will, it can be found on Amazon.com and my website at www.leonquechavette.com. That's LeonqueChavette.com. Thank you so much for your support. Okay, welcome back, and thank you for joining us for our podcast. We're here with our guest speaker, Deborah Stokes White. Again, she's former Vice President of Human Resources and Chief Diversity Officer for a private firm in North Carolina. And Debbie, again, thank you for joining us. You have fascinating stories, and I truly appreciate this, as I'm sure our listeners do as well. We're just going to wrap up here, because I know we all can talk for days and days about this stuff, because it's so, I mean, for me, it's extremely interesting, it's intriguing, and to hear some of the stories, I get so wrapped up in it. But so, for the book, We Made Plans, some of the characters experienced an active shooter event. And although it didn't occur in an office building setting, there were employees in the location who took steps to get others and themselves out of harm's way. What were your thoughts on how that unfolded in the book?
So, I was just grateful that someone was well-trained and prepared, and that they got the people to safety. You know, and you could tell when you were reading it that they were rolling out a well thought out and a well prepared action plan. You knew that it wasn't just someone acting out of panic or fear. And really, had it not been for his preparedness, the manager in the scene, people would have panicked and run it right into the line of fire. So I could tell what struck home with me was how important it was that somebody was trained and prepared.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly. And that's the connection between the book and the podcast, because the main character, Raquel, was unprepared before it happened, and mm-hmm. after the fact was, you know, upset by that. And so the connection is that the podcast is trying to get people to be prepared, to do things in advance so that you know, with the understanding that God forbid it ever happens. But at least in your mind, you're prepared for something.
Yeah.
So thank you. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Okay. So wearing your VP of HR and Chief Diversity hat, share with us, you know, additionally, what else resonated with you from that diversity and VP perspective? What was your takeaway from reading the book in reference in general to active shooter events?
For me, from an HR perspective, it was really, again, about training, just that I really do think that I know that in a lot of retail establishments, there's training, and in certain, you know, colleges, university settings like that. But in a lot of corporate settings, there's not active shooter training. There's emergency preparedness training. And just the need to maybe wrap into the emergency preparedness training for all employees and awareness training around active shooter events at a minimum. Mm-hmm. And then for people at other levels of leadership and those who are responsible for like employee safety mm-hmm. and employee well-being, that you actually have active shooter training. It really is important. Yeah. We get a false sense of security because it hasn't happened in our workplace, and God forbid, you know, that it ever would, you know, prayerfully it won't ever happen. But I left the book feeling the need, the knowledge that it's essential to be prepared.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. So one of my other questions for you was, and I actually thought that corporations were better at making sure active shooter training was something presented to the employees, but do you think that that's something that should be mandatory?
I think that that the at some level it should be, even if it's the training that is more like an awareness training for all employees, it should be mandatory. Mm-hmm. And for leaders, I think it should be mandatory. I do. And I don't think corporations are doing a great job of that. That's not something that you see on the agendas a lot. You see other kinds of, you know, we talk about dealing with employees who return to the workplace, but it's not so much it's dealing with that specific situation. But there are other things that happen. You could be having a convention or a meeting, you know, and I don't think the training is there. So, yeah, I think it should be mandatory.
Okay. All right. And is there anything else you want our listeners to know in order to be safe, be vigilant, and be prepared in the workplace or beyond?
I personally can't emphasize enough that everybody has a responsibility to report. I think that we're sometimes hesitant because we don't think that what we have is concrete or conclusive enough. But if you see something, if you even have an inkling that there's a potential for violence, don't try to investigate it yourself. Don't feel like you need to have something conclusive. As you said at the beginning of our conversation, report it, let the authorities figure it out. Report it because you care about life. You care about your life, your colleagues, and you care about the person who poses a potential threat. Each of us has to believe that it's my responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. And I'm always happy to have subject matter experts in the field speak with me on, you know, the various subtopics of active shooter response. And you, Debbie, have provided great information to our listeners. So, again, I thank you for sharing this and for joining me on this podcast. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. All right. So to all of our listeners, I hope you found this information valuable. The point is, as both Debbie and I have expressed, that it's important to be prepared. Again, prepared means that you are ready before an event happens, not to be like the character in my book and think about what you could have done and all the different ways you could have handled stuff after the fact. We all spend a great deal of time in our workplace, in school, and other places, and we need to feel as safe as possible, and we need to be aware of options available to us. So if your place of business doesn't have an active shooter response training set up yet, like Debbie mentioned that some corporations aren't there yet, then be the one to take the lead, to get the ball rolling. I know that for my place of work, I was one of the first people to mention something. I took a webinar, and then I spoke to my director, and then someone else who was also working on it. We collaborated and came up with, you know, this whole presentation. And then 2 years later, it was modified and we continued to roll it out. But it's okay. Be the one to get the ball rolling. And, you know, you can talk to your personnel. Even if you're a small company, that's okay. You don't have to have an HR person. Talk to the owner or whoever that is and try to get something in place. The point is to boldly take the lead. It's a tough decision to report someone like a coworker. You know, you may feel like you'll be retaliated against, like Debbie mentioned, or that it won't remain confidential, or that you're making a mountain out of a molehill. I say make the report anonymously and let the professionals sort it out. It's not our responsibility to figure out if someone will actually commit a heinous crime or where they are on the path of destruction or on the behavior continuum, but it is our responsibility to trust our guts and to report suspicious activity, comments, posts on social media, leakage, or the specific words. I just have a quick example that the Parkland, Florida school shooter specifically said, "I'm going to be a professional school shooter," and nobody reported him. So if you see something, say something. If you suspect something, report something. Speak up. it may literally save dozens of lives. So you guys, if you want to be in contact with me, you can go to my website at www.leonquechevette.com. Remember, my debut novel, We Made Plans, is available on Amazon.com and my website. And it, again, that's www.leonquechevette.com. Thank you so much for listening. And most importantly, guys, we make plans every day. And to see those plans through, we all, with regard to our personal safety, need to be safe, be vigilant, and be prepared, and be blessed. Love you all, and thank you.